Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama arrived in Saudi Arabia's capital of Riyadh Wednesday for a summit meeting with King Salman and his fellow Gulf Arab leaders. During his two-day visit, President Obama will attend the Gulf Summit Thursday that includes leaders from Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates, as well as Oman. During a photo op, President Obama personally thanked the Saudi king.
The American people send their greetings, and we're very grateful for your hospitality, not just for this meeting, but also for hosting the GCC U.S. summit.
The president hopes to focus discussions on the fight against jihadist groups and the efforts to end wars in Syria and Yemen. Meanwhile, U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter and his Gulf Arab counterparts met in Riyadh Wednesday to discuss ways to counter Iranian influence and the fight against the Islamic State. Secretary Carter spoke at a news conference afterwards.
We've made important strides in providing the GCC nations with critical defense equipment, over $33 billion worth since last May, including over 66,000 precision-guided munitions to support urgent GCC operational requirements such as the counter-ISIL campaign.
You can read more details about the president's visit at voanews.com. The UN Refugee Agency said Wednesday that it feared around 500 migrants from Africa had drowned in the Mediterranean after witnesses said their overcrowded boat sank. A UNHCR spokeswoman said in a statement that survivors from Somalia, Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt were rescued from a small boat and described seeing a large shipwreck that took place in the Mediterranean, claiming the lives of about 500 people. This is VOA News. Egypt slammed the UN chief Wednesday, accusing him of meddling in its affairs after Ban Ki-moon called for a fair trial for two prominent rights activists accused of illegally receiving foreign funds for their non-government organizations. The rebuke was the latest sign of Egypt's growing impatience with international criticism of its human rights record. The development came as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry made a brief visit to Cairo, meeting with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi for talks that appeared partially designed to bury a recent public spat between the two longtime allies over Egypt's human rights record. The death toll from a Taliban suicide attack in Kabul has more than doubled to 64, according to officials Wednesday. The brazen assault Tuesday happened in a densely packed Kabul neighborhood. A powerful Taliban truck bomb tore through central Kabul, and a fierce firefight broke out. This is the Interior Ministry spokesman Sadiq Siddiqui. He says, "It is with regret that I announce that 64 people were killed and 347 others wounded in yesterday's attack. Most of them were civilians." He said they had a message from the people of Afghanistan to the Taliban that they will face retaliation for their actions. The EU slapped Google with antitrust charges Wednesday over its widely used Android mobile phone operating system. The Competition Commissioner, Marguerite Vestager, said Google had used practices such as making manufacturers pre-install its search engine as a default. She said the preliminary conclusions from the investigations is that these practices breach EU competition law.
What we found is that Google pursue an overall strategy on mobile devices to protect and expand its dominant position in internet search.
Meanwhile, the United Nations began evacuating hundreds of wounded people from besieged Syrian towns on Wednesday. It's a rare sign of humanitarian progress amid faltered peace talks and fraying ceasefire. In Geneva, the Syrian government said it was pushing on with indirect negotiations, calling the opposition's freeze on its participation absurd theater. The anti-government High Negotiations Committee this week suspended its participation in the UN broker talks until it could see progress on political transition and humanitarian issues. Unidentified gunmen attacked policemen guarding medical workers administering polio vaccinations in Karachi, Pakistan, Wednesday, killing seven of them. It's the latest violence against efforts to eradicate the crippling disease. Teams in Pakistan are working to immunize children against the virus. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suwib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
In Zambia, police have arrested more than 200 people following 2 days of attacks on foreigners in the capital, Lusaka. The violence this week was sparked by rumors that foreigners had carried out ritual killings. But local civil society groups say people are looking for scapegoats amid anger over the rising cost of living and other economic issues.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up also. The UN Refugee Agency is reporting what could be one of the worst migrant boat tragedies in the last 12 months. International monitors say the failure of South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar to return to Juba yesterday puts the country's peace deal at risk. And the Associated Press reports the Libyan army has gained ground against Islamist militants in Benghazi. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the UN Refugee Agency is reporting what could be one of the worst migrant boat tragedies in the last 12 months. A UNHCR team has interviewed survivors of a boat that sank in the Mediterranean on or around April 13th, somewhere between Libya and Italy. If their accounts are confirmed, as many as 500 people may have died. Only 41 were rescued. Survivors say they were part of a vessel carrying up to 200 people that had left Tobruk. Several hours later, they say smugglers tried to transfer them to a larger ship that was already overcrowded, carrying hundreds of other migrants. They say during the transfer, the larger vessel capsized and sank. The UNHCR says those who survived had not yet boarded the large vessel, as well as others who managed to swim back to the original boat. They drifted at sea for possibly 3 days before being rescued on April 16th. Those rescued include 23 Somalis, 11 Ethiopians, 6 Egyptians, and a Sudanese. The UNHCR says well over 179,000 migrants and refugees have reached Europe this year by crossing the Mediterranean and Aegean. At least 761 have died. In related news, there are now 54,000 migrants and refugees in Greece. The government has released the latest figure as it tries to relocate them to new camps built by the military. Most are in northern Greece, with up to 12,000 of them at the Macedonian border in the town of Idomeni. Also, Germany is calling on migrants in Idomeni to leave the makeshift camp there and move to the official shelters. German Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen visited Athens yesterday. Reporter Mariana Karakulaki is following developments from the city of Thessaloniki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about Greek efforts to relocate the migrants from the border town.
As of now, there has not been any announcement by the Greek government, although the Greek government is insisting that the camp in Idomeni has to clear. And they gave kind of an ultimatum for the 1st of May. However, the problem is that the camps are not ready. For example, I have met some people that went in a camp near Idomeni. It's called Alexandria Camp. And they returned to Idomeni because of the horrible conditions. And they actually described that Idomeni is a 5-star hotel compared to that camp. So I think Germany and generally Greece have no idea what's going on and the conditions that are in these camps. They have been set up too fast, they're not ready, and people are suffering. The only camp that I've heard that it's a nice place to be is the camp in Veria. All the other camps have serious problems. And not only when it comes to the facilities or to what the military provides or anything, but also from the local communities. A lot of hatred against refugees in some areas, for example. And they are attacking the camps and they do not want the camps to exist in their areas. It's not very common, but it still exists.
Can you tell us what's happening on the Greek islands now?
Today there was a crackdown in Lesbos to a solidarity movement called Open Borders Kitchen. They have been providing meals to refugees in one of the camps in Lesbos. The police went in with a district attorney and they removed everyone, and I think they made some arrests as well. The reason they gave for this crackdown was for hygiene reasons and for building instability. But the reality is that the main reason that this happened is because they want to close down all solidarity movements, and there has been some kind of a war against volunteers and solidarity movements in Greece generally, not only in the islands, from the Greek government. They need to show that they actually do something for the refugee crisis. But until now, the Greek government has been relying on the solidarity movements to do their job.
Do you know if any of the migrants have been returned to Turkey in recent days or weeks?
The returns are not that much on the Greek media at this point, but they have not stopped.
That's reporter Mariana Karakoulaki from the Greek city of Thessaloniki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa, Thomas Perriello, says the Burundi government is the driver of the current crisis and not the victim. His statement comes after visiting the country's community leaders. It's the seventh time Perriello has visited Burundi in the last year. Moses Javierimana reports from Bujumbura.
Since the political crisis began in Burundi last year, the U.S. Special Envoy has met with religious leaders, community and civil society leaders and government officials in an effort to restore peace in Burundi. The crisis began last April when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek for a third term. Since then, hundreds have been killed in violence and hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. Thomas Perriello says the Burundi government is responsible.
As I said, the government of Burundi is the driver, not the victim of this current crisis, whether it's on the political side or the economic side. When you take steps that make the situation worse, like the new banking laws, I mean, forget whatever political points they score with that. There are real lives at stake here with the economic conditions, and this is not a time to create and introduce greater fragility into the economy.
The current Burundi banking law says that all funds which enter in the country to support civil society organizations and non-government organizations should first be channeled through the central bank. The special envoy says that the United States will continue to invest in English programs and in public health programs in the country.
We are frankly bending over backwards to find ways to continue over $50 million of programs here each year. The government is doing everything it can to make it impossible for us and other partners to continue to support the Burundian people and the economy. That includes recent banking laws that almost guarantee more money will leave the country, thus accelerating an economic crisis they've helped to create.
Perriello says the United States supports the regional-led inclusive dialogue to end the crisis and urged the stakeholders to resume the talks as soon as possible. The dialogue is led by former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa as part of the East African Community's peace efforts.
The government has committed at several points to participating in the East African Community dialogue, and they have accepted the facilitation role of President Mkapa. And we hope that very soon they will have an opportunity to prove that they are good to their word and their pledge. We hope that a date will be set soon for talks, but I cannot answer for them. They have said that they are committed to the dialogue process. And as we all know, deeds are more important than words, and we will see this process goes forward.
Late last year, the Inter-Burundi Dialogue was officially relaunched in Uganda. However, it is still not clear when it will resume. The Burundi government has said that it will not engage in talks with some opposition leaders whom it believes were behind last year's attempted coup. Moses Javierimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
International monitors say the failure of South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar to return yesterday to Juba is putting a peace deal at risk. It's the second time this week Machar delayed his arrival. Machar was expected to arrive in the capital to form a transitional government with President Salva Kiir following 2.5 years of war. But last-minute disputes over the number of troops and weapons the rebels can bring into the capital delayed his return. The government now says it will allow Machar's top general into Juba with 195 troops. The rebels have accepted that number. number, but the government says they can only bring rifles. The rebels want to bring rocket-propelled grenade launchers and machine guns. The international body overseeing the peace process has called an emergency meeting for tomorrow between government and rebel officials in hopes of resolving the situation. In Zambia capital Lusaka, police have arrested more than 200 people following 2 days of attacks on foreigners. The violence this week was sparked by rumors that foreigners had carried out ritual killings. But local civil society groups say people are looking for scapegoats amid anger over the rising cost of living and other economic issues. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Zambian police have deployed more than 2,000 police officers to maintain order after 2 days of violence and looting in Lusaka. According to police and officials, the looters targeted both foreign and locally owned shops. Police spokeswoman Charity Munganga tells VOA they have made arrests.
We've arrested 262 suspects in connection with the looting. And then we also have 11 suspects in custody in connection with the alleged ritual killings. So right now it has nothing to do with foreigners, but it's people who have taken advantage of the situation.
Munganga knows the suspects thought to be behind the alleged killings were not foreigners.
These suspects are Zambians. We are not giving any details because this case is still under investigation. But once we are done with our investigation, we'll give out their names and we'll give out exactly what is it that we found them with.
Ritual killings are a problem in parts of Africa where some people believe magic potions or ceremonies can bring them success in business and life. Maxon Homa of Civil Society for Poverty in Zambia says poverty and a lack of opportunity are the real cause of the violence against business owners.
Poverty is actually being manifested through these attacks which are targeting at shops belonging to foreigners. Because these attacks are not targeted at individual foreigners, but they are shops. And when you see people walking out of these shops, it's either they have carried a bag of mini meal, they have carried the sugar, these basic food items.
The copper-rich African country is facing economic challenges because of the fall in the price of copper. Copper accounts for 2/3 of the country's export earnings. Meanwhile, the price of essential commodities has gone up by 20%. A Rwandan business owner in Lusaka told VOA's Central Africa Service the locals are not a happy lot.
The thing which is being talked about by the natives, they're talking about Rwandans taking big part in business, having a lot of shares and having a lot of money to the extent of them not having food and enough jobs.
Zambia has long hosted thousands of refugees from Rwanda and other nearby countries. But this is the first time the country has seen large-scale attacks on foreigners. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yeis Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN Refugee Agency is reporting what could be one of the worst migrant boat tragedies in the last 12 months. If their accounts are confirmed, as many as 500 people may have died. International monitors say the failure of South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar to return to Juba yesterday puts the country's peace deal at risk. And in Zambia's capital, Lusaka, police have arrested more than 200 people following 2 days of attacks on foreigners. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The U.S. has imposed sanctions on a senior Libyan official accused of undermining the peace process. Senior Middle East reporter Mohamed El-Shenawi has the details.
State Department spokesperson John Kirby announced that President Obama issued a new executive order authorizing the United States to impose sanctions on individuals and entities who threaten the peace, security, and stability of Libya.
This executive order allows the United States to take action against those who seek to obstruct, undermine, delay, or impede the political transition to the Libyan government of national accord, as well as those who threaten the peace, security, or stability of Libya through the supply of arms or related material. The president took this action in support of Libya's government of national accord, and the United States stands with, as we've said before, Prime Minister al-Sarraj's government as it begins their important work in Tripoli and continues to implement the Libyan political agreement to build a better future for the Libyan people.
The Treasury Department designated Khalifa Ghouail, the leader of the Tripoli-based government, for being responsible and complicit in undermining the peace process. Any assets held by Ghouail in areas under U.S. jurisdiction will be frozen. Ghouail was the only named figure added to the Treasury sanctions list, but Mr. Obama's executive order allows U.S. officials to target all opponents of the peace process. The UN-backed government of national accord is trying to take control in the country and replace rival governments in Tripoli and Tobruk. Ghouail, who heads the rival authority in Tripoli, has not submitted to the new government. In early April, he issued a statement calling on ministers not to stand down and threatened to persecute anyone who cooperated with the government of national accord or GNA. The international community sees the GNA, under Prime Minister-designate Faiz al-Sarraj, as the best hope for Libya. The U.S. urged all Libyans to continue facilitating a peaceful handover of power so that Libya's new leaders can begin the hard work of restoring stability to their country. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
And in more from Libya, the Associated Press reports the Libyan army has gained ground against Islamist militants in Benghazi, the country's second largest city. The army is under the command of General Khalifa Haftar, who once fought for former leader Muammar Gaddafi and then against him. AP code sources are saying the latest attack was launched on three fronts and killed dozens of militants and high-ranking officials in Benghazi. The Libyan National Army is loyal to one of the country's rival governments based in Tobruk. The government had been recognized by the international community. However, support has now shifted to the UN-backed government of National Accord, which is struggling to take control. The Egyptian government has told UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to stop meddling in its affairs. It criticized Mr. Ban after he called for a fair trial for two rights activists accused of receiving foreign funds for their NGOs. AP quotes Egyptian Foreign Ministry spokesman Ahmed Abu Zayed as saying the UN leader was trying to intimidate his country's judiciary. Mr. Ban says he is closely following the case of Gamal Eid and Hassan Bagat, adding that they should benefit from all due process and fair trial standards. Zayed is the founder and head of the Arabic Network for Human Rights Information, and Bagat founded the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights. They are accused of receiving $1.5 million in illegal funds from foreign entities for their NGOs. In other news on Egypt, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has concluded his visit after meeting with President al-Sisi. Kerry says the United States views Egypt as critical to peace and security in the entire region. He says the U.S. wants to help Egypt overcome the difficult challenges it faces, both in security and the economy. The French government has announced it will extend the country's state of emergency for another 2 months. It was put in place after November's terrorist attacks in Paris. Two major international sporting events will receive extra protection as a result. The current state of emergency is set to expire May 26th, but Prime Minister Manuel Valls says it will be extended to guarantee security for both the Euro 2016 Football Championship and the Tour de France cycling race. The month-long football event starts on June 10th, while the Tour de France runs from July 2nd through 24th. France is the only European country to declare a state of emergency because of terrorism. It put the measure in place after November's attack that killed 130 people. It has been 5 years since the end of Ivory Coast's second civil war. The government has just released a list of over 300,000 people entitled to compensation for crimes suffered during both wars, mainly as a result of political crisis stretching back to 1990. Emilia Ayoub reports from Abidjan.
The government agency responsible for compensating victims, CONARIV, received 800,000 applications. All but about a third of them were rejected. CONARIV Commissioner Françoise Kodjis-Ofumu says the main challenge was the verification of all the applications. She says some people were listed twice, some applications were incomplete, and there were also cases of fraud. The final list of more than 300,000 names has been submitted to the presidency for approval. The agency put the claims in four categories: gender-based violence, serious injury, murder and forced disappearance, and damage to property. 84% of claims are in that fourth category, damage to property. For Isiaka Diaby, president of the CVCI, a victims association, the list has been long awaited. He says it's a relief to see the list being handed to the government in order to execute programs in favor of the victims. Last year, a partial list of 24,500 victims of the 2010 and 2011 post-election conflict was released. It led to payments for about $260 for people who were injured, plus coverage of the medical fees, and as much as $1,700 per family to relatives of those killed. Diaby says compensation is an important symbolic act, but people orphaned, widowed, or disabled by the war also need long-term assistance. He says this kind of social reintegration is a strong way to prevent future violence. Emilia Yop for VOA News in Abidjan.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the 2016 World Bank IMF Spring Meetings. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Bandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in Africa news, features, and sports. We are also available on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.